You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Beep boop bites.
Beep boop bites.
Beep boop.
Oh, in case Kelly is out there listening, he wanted this.
Ow!
Ow!
Sweet. Dude, what are you doing? That
laser,
thing's the safety's ribbon. Off.
Ow!
Set to stun.
Stun, Kyle.
Set to embarrass.
Ow.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm still Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse. Hello.
I'm not used to having everybody here.
I love his enthusiasm these days.
Groovehouse is
Groovehouse
so
is, it's infectious.
And
what?
Nonchalant.
Nah, Groovehouse.
We're lucky to have him. So, we're booked for DEF CON 24.
What? Oh, so we should probably on our homepage say that the this Friday's party is DEF CON 23 Redux. Unless we're going to relive a year and a half ago or a year ago.
Did I say 20?
I think it says DEF CON 22 on there.
I did. No, it does not.
It did the other day, but I logged myself out of everything, so I couldn't get into the site to fix it.
Bro, do you even know how to run?
Uh-oh, geekradio.com briefly unavailable for scheduled maintenance.
Pete. Wasn't me. Pete.
He's wrenching away.
I think Barrett didn't log out of everything.
No, I really took myself out of everything.
He logged out of everything.
I left no breadcrumb trails to Houston when I went to Vegas.
Huh. Logged out of the website.
You brought your hacked phone back with you, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did your phone get pwned?
It didn't get pwned. Someone got in between me and a tower. So we can talk about this, but I think that's what the consensus is.
We need to talk about this.
We may talk about
that
at some point.
You knew what you were getting into.
Oh yeah, no, I had a lot of stuff turned off, and it wasn't just me. It
happened
to people.
For those listening at home, we you know, Flicted, Barrett, myself have returned from DEF CON.
DEF CON.
DEF CON.
DEF CON is the world's largest hacking conference.
Did you just say hacking conference?
Annual, at least.
That's the largest annual hacking conference.
There's one in Germany every 4 years, and that may eke out DEF CON. But that's because they've got a, you know, they don't have to deal with hotels. They can just go occupy forests and camp.
Because that's how Germany works.
Just take over, you know, a beer hall and a forest. Beer. You're good to go.
What else do you need?
So we're back. We're back from probably the most dangerous and hostile network you can imagine crawling into.
It is the world's most hostile network.
It is.
Germans apparently have gotten really friendly as of late. So they're all buddy buddy, and let's exfiltrate data out of world's dangerous places for journalists. And DEF CON is all about
install everybody's patches for them.
Yeah, it's much more like, you know, the bar on Tatooine.
It's a murderous hive of scum and villainy. Mos Eisley.
Thank you.
Mos Eisley.
Our brains are still fried too. I'm just getting my voice back. For the most part.
From
I didn't lose
that,
it, but just
from
that whole raspiness.
Raving, screaming you did.
No, just the lack of moisture.
Lack of sobriety.
Yeah.
Lack of non-alcoholic moisture.
Well, we had a good time. So, Barrett, your phone.
Tell us about your phone.
Yeah, so, of course.
He has an Android, and as you know, Androids were
There were the news. Pete did, you know, some really cool stories on, you know, we had Stage Fright. There were a couple of different exploits that were coming out. They were mostly targeted Android. And a lot of them were involved, you know, you going to a certain website. Or, you know, getting a certain MMS message sent to you. And, you know, your Stage Fright, the base media player trying to load and play that file, which could have, you know, malicious stuff in it. So I powered down just about everything on my phone except for the actual, you know, LTE signal to the tower. And now there's some of this is a little bit conjecture. Now, there was a Chinese team made up of some younger people. They were pretty gifted, and they were in giving talks on more or less how to take over, you know, use Vimto cells. Inflicted's got his headphones on now, so you can fact check me and back me up on this. But they take over Vimto cells, get in the middle, and more or less be able to, you know, intercept phone calls, maybe play around with phones, do some stuff like that. I was much more concerned about, you know, loading up something and getting software on my phone. I think this attack was they were more able just to inject text messages, things like that. That's all that really happened, where some text messages came across. I've got, you know, like a root check kit and some other things on my phone. Once I got back, I did a little bit of forensics and stayed up way too late the first night I flew back, but nothing's on there and it's clean. And then re-imaged
it just in case. Yeah, it's kind of a man in the middle situation where, so they, at the beginning of their talk, they said, oh, how can you go to get a Vimto cell? Well, you can contact these people and tell them that, you know, you don't get good signal in your house, whatever. Say, please send me a Vimto cell. That's how they got there, I guess. And so then they went through the process of how they figured out how to break into it, which actually wasn't all that difficult.
The password was 12345.
No, actually, there was no password.
They're not meant to be secure. These things were meant to be installed in like buildings and by other professionals without really ever thinking like, hey, let's, you know, protect these from.
So in fact, their talk and the guy and lady that hacked the Linux rifle scope
tracking point
were actually very similar tells, because in fact I heard that pretty much everybody's tell was like, we get this device, we look at the network, we run nmap against it, then we hook up to see if we can get a terminal connection, a console connection. In both cases, they got console connections, but with the femtocell people, they were like, well, it said press any key to break the boot, so we did it, and we had a root prompt. whereas with the rifle people, they said, we did it, and we thought, oh, some people get root prompts, maybe we'll get a root prompt. Well, they got a login prompt, so they had to go further, so they actually had to find the chip, because the file system was on a separate chip than the OS was on.
Yes.
So they had to find that other file chip, and then eventually they tried some other stuff, and then they were like, eventually they're like, we're gonna have to like unsolder it from the board and put it in a reader, which you can get on Alibaba for like $100. And they were like, this controller's probably worth $70 or $80 all by itself without any of the rest of it. But they took it to some people who were helping them look at it, and those people realized that there were pinouts on the board that it was on to actually do the same thing. And so they didn't have to
desolder
it. Yeah. They just connected up to those pinouts and were able to read the file system chip and were able to get information enough to figure out.
Did you go to the Linux rifle talk?
I was kind of in it because I was.
You don't have to physically be there to actually be there. So I guess were you physically in the room?
No, that's the day I was shadowing.
Oh yeah.
So I've shot him before. I've talked with the company a lot. The rifle actually runs a modified version of Angstrom Linux, with some custom BitBake recipes and kernel modules to support the proprietary hardware. So they could have, and maybe they did. They could have used IP tables and secured it as you would secure any kind of Wi-Fi enabled Linux system, if they had wanted to. And
it's you can still get around that though. I mean, the issue is this is the same distribution that I run on my Raspberry Pis at home, and I think it started out kind of with that, and not so much security minded.
Angstrom Linux.
Angstrom is Angstrom. That's the main thing. It's an embedded Linux. It's pretty
that's
standard.
Why they picked it, yeah.
I think the problem with the FemtoCell people is that they never actually thought that people would have a keyboard with an any key on it. Because I don't. I could not get into a FemtoCell, but I think they did have the any. Because they have so many Chinese characters, there's got to be an any character.
I saw Tracking Point's response to the hack.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious.
Their response was basically, I don't have the press release in front of me, but first of all, the company is like in the process of folding right now anyway. So they're collapsing due to a lot of reasons. But their response was basically, well, when you're out in Africa, in the wilderness, hunting lions and stuff, this isn't really a problem. So it's only when you actually get in range of anybody with Wi-Fi that this is a problem. So just don't use the weapon anywhere in range of Wi-Fi.
Mountain Lion had Wi-Fi. Lion, all the OS-10s had Wi-Fi. Man, it's big cats.
The actual exact wording that they put up was, don't use the rifle if there's a hacker within 100 feet.
That's sage advice.
Yes. Don't shoot.
And then I guess the people that had done the hack posted that update in their thing.
Yeah.
In Tracking Point's thing.
And then
immediately people started replying to them with pictures of Pringle cans.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So you can definitely be more than 100 feet away.
I mean, I've talked to this company a lot, not to go down this rabbit hole. And every time I've talked to them before they folded and began the process of collapsing because of crazy management issues, I would always kind of ask them, like, how do you prevent bad actors from buying this gun and, you know, going crazy with it because it's accurate to 1,000 yards out, anybody can shoot it? And then B, what are you doing from a security standpoint to keep people from screwing with it? Because it is a Wi-Fi enabled embedded system that also happens to be attached to a high powered firearm. And their answers were always very conservative, and they would always say something like, well, you know, we've made it so that, like, the trigger mechanism is physically decoupled. You have to act like you cannot cause
you can't
the
fire
weapon
the gun.
To fire.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
There was no way to fire it remotely. Yeah, the trigger's firewalled. But from what I didn't see the talk, but from what I read about everybody's write-up, you can adjust the aim point. You can aim anywhere.
You can jitter it enough to where if you wanted to degrade, you know, if the person that had a grudge against you, they're shooting at you, didn't respect the, hey, don't shoot at a hacker, you could fuzz the gun enough to where the chances of them hitting you would go down significantly to where you'd have a competitive advantage on, I don't know if you call that a competitive advantage. You'd probably shoot them before they shot you because they're going to be shooting all over the place.
Could you turn on the microphone or whatever, too?
No, I think the value that they changed, that they realized, I think some of it they played with, and there were only a couple options you could choose from, but the one that they found that didn't have any kind of range control on it was the black powder, like the grains of black powder in the actual cartridge.
How much the weight was actually in there.
Yeah, and so
that has to be a known quantity or the ballistics.
And so, what they did was they put it up to like 500,000 grains or something.
It's like a bullet the size.
Which works out to like 72 pounds of black powder in the cartridge.
It's like a battleship round.
But doing that, when they did that, that was how they were able to get it to fire completely off target.
Yeah. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how destructive that would be, but it certainly would screw it up. And I mean, a lot of the objection that people have to these kind of to Tracking Points specifically is that the weapons are unethical and unfair and bad and terrible. There's a lot of general objection in the ethical hacking
community. Because drones are hand-fired.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
There's a lot of objections in the ethical hacking community to this company and what they do in the first place. So anything that's disruptive to their product, I think, would be embraced by
by people of a certain mindset, I
guess. Swordsmen all over the world shaking their head going, yeah. I told you so.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, hackers love guns. There's a whole big DEF CON shoot happens out in the desert every time. So, you know.
Well, I saw the shuttle that takes you out to somebody, one of our friends that was there was actually going out there. Going out to shoot the M50 or whatever.
Oh, the 50 cal, yeah. There were some big guns out there. Was it Tim, maybe? He looks like the guy that drives tanks. Seems like the guy that would maybe shoot a 50 cal.
Actually, so a guy I know that was there went out and shot a minigun.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking about.
Oh,
and so it was
like
100 rounds. I forget how much it cost.
It's expensive, and it ends in seconds.
You're like, yeah, so how long did that last? Like a second and a half? He's like, nah, it took about 10 or 20 seconds because I paused a lot in between. but
make it last.
But he said in the same place they'll also let you, I don't remember how much he said it was, they'll let you rent a tank, and you can rent a tank and drive over a car.
Wait a minute. You can rent a tank
and run over a car.
Run over a car. That's awesome. I want to go do that. Jay, can we go do that?
We can.
Sweet.
I'll photograph it. We'll just go and... That'll be the next article for Ars Technica.
Sweet.
Cars Technica. Cars Destructica.
Cars Technica is our auto side. But this would be running over Cars Technica.
So, yeah, the minigun, I guess he got to pause because he wasn't killing the boss on the level.
You gotta shoot the glowing spot 3 times.
All right, so welcome to the show. We're still recouping. We're going to talk about a little bit of DEF CON here and there throughout the show, but... We want to let you know you can visit us online at geekradio.com. Did you bring any toys back? Are we going to have anything?
Yes, yeah. So we're going to have, I guess, this will do Barrett time now, kind of, quote, unquote. Yeah, we're going to have
the... Are you going to... Have you got a Barrett?
We will bring stuff out. No, I don't.
Okay.
As luck would have it.
So your snark was
That was a good try. I guess we'll just kind of do Barrett time now, and then we won't have to worry about it later.
Yeah, actually, I brought back...
All my planning out the window.
Mostly wireless gear, and some of it I've actually already dropped into our server racks at work.
Did you buy a, can I say anything?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
did you buy a HackRF?
Yes.
Did you buy the Bluetooth one?
Bluetooth HackRF.
I already had that, the Ubertooth one. Yeah.
So I've had a couple of Ubertooth ones for a while, so that's being able to survey the wireless. I guess the really big thing, and there are multiple big things, the big thing that I went to a lot was all the software-defined radio stuff, and that's mainly you getting into wireless, getting into RFID. So, like, the radio frequency ID tags that get you access into buildings and stuff like that.
Federal aviation
channels. Yeah, stuff like that. A little bit of ham radio stuff, but mainly just all the wireless signals, because you don't realize how much is just bouncing around you. You think that the air is clean, but, you know, you start listening, and you're just amazed at how much is out there. And in most cases, it's perfectly legal to listen. You know, you don't get into decoding digital signals and things like that, but there's just a lot of chatter out there in the airwaves, a lot of signals, garage door openers, just all kinds of things buzzing around, and it's kind of cool to be able to get a pair of ears on them.
So we'll have that out at the Geek Gathering this Friday, which is our DEF CON.
Yes. Yeah, the toys I brought are mostly, they're the sneaky kind of toys that you might find in an organization or if someone wanted to, you know, like drop something and spy on you or things like that. So
what else? What else did you buy?
I got a land turtle. So it just looks like an innocuous like USB adapter to Ethernet, and you put it in there and it's got a full, you know, little, pretty much like the same thing that the Linux gun is running. It's a little 400 megahertz ARM chip running a little, I think it's got BusyBox, it's the Linux distribution, with a user interface. It's got a bridge, dual two-bridged Ethernet card. So the deal is, you know, you say, hey, here's your Ethernet connection, or you just, you know, you plug it in, shows up, Windows computers, Mac computers, automatically pull an IP address from it, and it's just a man-in-the-middle attack, and you can also run
things.
It's a
keylogger, or it actually shows what's going across the wire?
No, it just shows, although, since it's actually plugged in, you could probably load up other drivers on there, but the main thing is you don't want a savvy computer, you just say, oh, there's some other piece of software that's loading up like an HID device. It just shows up only as a LAN driver that the majority of companies use, and a lot of policies say, hey, that's fine because we recognize that it's just shuttling, you know, Ethernet traffic. Go ahead and, you know, bless. They've already signed off on the drivers for the adapter. And it looks just like any other one. So I think what they've done is they've taken like an Ethernet, you know, Ethernet to USB adapter and just dropped a lot of electronics in there and then installed, you know, some software on there. And then even if you're behind LANs and stuff like that, behind firewalls, you can actually have it tunnel back out. You can do reverse tunnels with Netcat. You can do a whole bunch of stuff. So it's just kind of neat. Also, I got it for a practical tool because I can plug it in somewhere at work and I can immediately get back to that point from wherever I happen to be. So if I need an emergency VPN or, you know, emergency connection or a back door to leave open, as it were.
What does it plug into?
USB. USB one end, Ethernet, port on the other end, and then because it's got an embedded chipset, there are actually two distinct hardware Ethernet ports on there, but they're bridged there at the RJ45 jack. So maybe, you can bring up a fake interface on the same LAN.
So maybe you can tell me, are you aware of a device, whether it be like Raspberry Pi based or Arduino based or whatever, that has an Ethernet connection and can draw power over Ethernet?
Yeah, well, possibly. So there are a couple different ways to do that. Most of the connections do that the cheaper way. They're like for $6 or $7 or $8. You can buy just a little breakout that, you know, takes power out over PoE and then just plugs it into whatever kind of adapter you want. That's one way to do it. Now, what we will be doing, and I think I'll have it in time for this Friday, is you can go to DEF CON and you can spend all this money and buy these things. Some of the things you can only get in person in cash, or you can get, you know, on like some kind of national list by ordering them online, or...
Or you can get on another list by ordering them online.
Or, yeah, you can get on my list. No. I attended a talk, and there is a really famous, he's a really well-known wireless security researcher, and he put out a book that has not been printed yet called, like, Build Your Own Hacking Device or something like that. And what it is, it's taking, you know, things like the, and we might talk about this later, but there's, you know, devices like the Wi-Fi Pineapple, devices a little bit like the Land Turtle, but if you were to throw Wi-Fi and GPRS and some other things on there, to find like these devices that cost like $15, $20, $30 off Amazon. The one I ordered for the Geek Gathering is battery powered. It's got Wi-Fi, A, B, G, N. It's got Ethernet. It's got Bluetooth. As like it's a self-contained battery, and it was like cheaper than a meal in Vegas. Cheaper than a meal at like the underground food court in Vegas, because that could get really expensive depending on how you look at it. So the idea is that we should be showing people how to load up, you know, like DDWRT or OpenWRT, and then load up all the tool chains. And instead of dropping a couple $100 on one of these devices, you can build it for, you know, $20, $30 and have the exact same thing.
And then it can be Barrett time all the time.
Yeah.
All right. So visit us online at geekradio.com for information about the Geek Gathering coming up this Friday. We hope you join us. And we do have a Facebook event page. If you search for that on the Geek Radio, facebook.com/geekradio, you can RSVP there. And we're on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. IRC.cuckoo.com. Hacking conference. And in the channel Tech Bytes, join us there, show within a show. We're going to turn it over now to San Antonio and the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Wow, that was hot. Tonight's edition is a hackery, extra hackery edition of the InfoShot. This one comes from some of the stuff. There was news on this out of DEF CON, but there's a little bit more info, so I thought it was worth it. And it has a positive side too. This is on a car hacking story. You know, Tesla cars. You know, they demonstrated a hack. You know, one of the things to know is, you know, if you have a Tesla, say a Model S, you know, you just had that $100,000 lying around and went out of state and bought one. They have one security advantage a lot of other cars don't. You can't hotwire them. So a thief can't just break into it, pop the steering column, and, you know, fiddle with the cables and drive off. But if he has a computer with him, he could hotwire it another way. This is according to Wired. Two researchers have found that they could plug their laptop into a network cable behind a Model S driver's side dashboard, start the car with a software command, and drive it. They can also plant a remote access Trojan on the Model S's network while they had physical access, then later remotely cut its engine while someone was driving. That's Kevin Mahaffey, co-founder and CTO of mobile security firm Lookout, and Mark Rogers, principal security researcher for Cloudflare, are the two who discovered the vulnerabilities. Now, here's what was involved, though. They did this over a period of 2 years and discussed their findings at DEF CON last Friday. Both hacks require physical access to the car, at least initially, and they require control of the car's infotainment system, which has the ability to start the car or cut power to it. But the thing that they also found, the car's infotainment system was using an out-of-date browser, which contained a 4-year-old Apple WebKit vulnerability that could potentially let an attacker conduct a fully remote hack to start the car or cut the motor. It was all theoretical. The researchers found 6 vulnerabilities in the Tesla car and worked with the company for several weeks to develop fixes for some of them. Tesla distributed a patch to every Model S on the road on Wednesday. Unlike Fiat Chrysler, which recently had to recall 1.4 million cars and mail updates to users on a USB stick to fix vulnerabilities found in its cars, Tesla has the ability to quickly and remotely deliver software updates to its vehicles. Car owners only have to click yes when they see a prompt asking if they want to install the upgrade. So what it means is you need to hack Tesla at the Tesla level. Then you can distribute your hack as an update and handle everyone. I'm sure that I would think that they keep that pretty secure. The researchers' primary goal in examining the Model S was to determine what Tesla did right or wrong in order to figure out how the wider car industry could better secure their vehicles. The Tesla hacks highlight some of the dangers with digitally connected cars, but it's not as serious as the thing 2 weeks ago, with a Jeep where they, in that case, the vehicle didn't have any separation between the infotainment system and the critical drive system. So once research compromised the infotainment system, they could communicate with the drive system and cut the brakes or control the steering if the car was in reverse. Tesla, however, has a gateway between the infotainment and drive systems that is intended to prevent a hacker, remote or otherwise, from getting to the critical functions. There are still unanswered questions about how strongly Tesla's gateway protects its drive system from a hacker seizing total control of the car. They've got some more details. If you go to geekradio.com, there's a link to the article that tells more about it. Essentially, they say that the TLDR for you is that security of the Model S was generally good, but was focused primarily on perimeter security with less robust internal security. So once an attacker got in, then they could leapfrog from one component to another. He said that as you gained some kind of foothold, you were able to gradually leverage that with additional vulnerabilities to increase your access. So at that point, they could do anything the entertainment system could do, including opening and closing windows, locking and unlocking doors, raising and lowering the suspension, and cutting power to the car. They could also subvert a small screen that provides the driver with speed readouts by either altering the speed the driver sees or displaying distracting pictures on it. If you're sitting in a car that's traveling at high speed, so there's no speed information, it's pretty scary. So they also did some other things. There was the remote Trojan, which would allow them to use a mobile phone to telnet into the car and cut the power. And they also said that the vulnerabilities they found to achieve all of this were fairly basic. So it wasn't like in the past, there's been some times where people exploited, there was years ago, like Apple exploits that really involved, you had to almost be like somebody who wrote the system software for Apple to be able to figure out these vulnerabilities. They also found, the Model S has an Ethernet cable for diagnostic purposes, and by connecting to it, they were on the LAN. That allowed them to uncover information about the firmware update process, such as the configuration of the VPN the car used to obtain updates, as well as URLs from where the updates were downloaded. They found 4 SD cards inside the car that contained keys for the VPN structure, and they found unsecured passwords in an update file that allowed them to gain access to the Tesla firmware update server. Oops. So on the plus side, this is researchers working with Tesla, so it means that they're using this to learn and fix and close the holes. So that's good, because otherwise you have things like this one, which is this week in a new front in cybercrime. U.S. authorities broke up an alleged insider trading ring that relied on computer hackers to steal corporate press releases, and then they profited on them by trading on the information on the press releases before they were released to the public. The two hackers, or the suspected hackers, are thought to be in Ukraine, allegedly infiltrated the computer servers of PR Newswire Association, Market Wired, and Business Wire over a 5-year period, and then got 150,000 press releases. And the idea is, of course, they could read these press releases the day before they went out to the public, and they would know what the effect was on the stock based on what the release was about. You know, an interesting place to get the an interesting way to use the information. I mean, it's not your traditional hack where they're taking control of the computer or any of that. They just had access. Prosecutors said the men targeted more than 100 companies and made approximately 100 or 1,000 inside the window trades. Money was then shifted offshore through Estonian banks. While U.S. prosecutors said that the 9 men netted $30 million, a broader lawsuit by the Securities and Exchange Commission listed more than 24 people and companies as defendants in an alleged scheme that earned $100 million. So, you know, it doesn't take much but some little things to get an advantage and to have hacking become apparently profitable, especially when actual business people are willing to pay you apparently for, you know, they would give a share of the benefit. One of the examples was at the beginning of 2012, Caterpillar submitted PR Newswire a prepared announcement stating its profits for the previous year had risen 36%. So it was on the server for less than 24 hours. It was scooped up by the hackers and passed to the traders. And in the short window between when they hacked, when they got the press release and when the market opened and everybody knew about it, they allegedly bought $8.3 million in Caterpillar stock and options. And then once the announcement came out, the stock went up by 2%, which meant that they made a profit of $1 million in basically a matter of 6 hours. So just interesting what hacking can do. And on another hacking story, the opposite of the Tesla approach is the apparently Oracle security approach. One of their security chief has a blog, and she basically went on her blog to say that she's tired of customers performing their own security tests on Oracle software, and she's not going to take it anymore. And she put it on her corporate blog on August 10th, and then it has since been taken down. Maybe she thought that all the security researchers in the world were busy recovering from Black Hat and DEF CON and would somehow, you know, be more accepting. She wrote a stern message to customers entitled, "No, You Really Can't," was the title. Her message: stop scanning Oracle's code for vulnerabilities or we will come after you. Davidson scolded customers who performed their own security analysis of code, calling it reverse engineering and violating Oracle's software license. She said, even if you want to have reasonable certainty that suppliers take reasonable care in how they build their products, and there's so much more to assurance than running a scanning tool, there are a lot of things a customer can do, like, gosh, actually talking to the suppliers about their assurance programs or checking certifications, for which there are good housekeeping seals or good code seals like common criteria certifications or FIPS 140 certifications. So yeah, so she pretty well put her foot in it. It was up for less than a day before it was yanked. Let's see, they did distribute. Oracle Executive Vice President and Chief Corporate Architect Edward Screven made a statement distributed by email to the press of the Post. Quote, the security of our products and services has always been critically important to Oracle. Oracle has a robust program of product security assurance and works with third-party researchers and customers to jointly ensure that applications built with Oracle technology are secure. We removed the post as it does not reflect our beliefs or our relationship with our customers. Chief Security Officer fell out of alignment with Oracle's core beliefs and managed to spread her heretic thoughts on customers was not addressed. And then lastly, it's all alphabet soup now. The thing that was interesting to me about it on posting it on some of our internal video is that Barrett and I believe Flicted thought that this was some sort of DEF CON like joke, or that when Google announced that they were becoming Alphabet, that they were changing their company to be something else, which like basically they say, what is on the Google official blog? It says, what is Alphabet? It's the new name of their company. Oh, it's their URL, just because I think this is kind of interesting and cool. The new company that there is a holding company called Alphabet, and the URL to see it is http://abc.xyz. That's their, of course, that the .xyz is
the alpha and the omega. Yeah, we saw this site flying around. At first it came up, someone found the DNS entry. So not being super familiar with, you know, .xyz and being inside an area where someone could maybe, you know, peel off and, you know, DNS redirect poisoning. And also just the pure fact that I can go out and register a name under Sergey Brin or Donald Trump or, you know, whoever I want to and put in whatever fake information I want to. It seemed really fake. I mean, there's no way that's real. No way. So, you know. Oops.
When you're at the convention, trust really no one and nothing.
Yeah, you don't. The paranoia levels are extremely, extremely high.
Don't believe anything you see or hear or shows up on your phone.
Yeah, well, .xyz either is a really small, easy hack or a ginormous corporation doing its thing.
Well, they hit the Google blog right away, too. So, I mean, I think that hit on the 8th maybe or the very next day. So, I mean, they put that out there, too. But it's also very easy to, you know, say, like, hey, everything that's going to Google.com, you know, you grab that and you redirect it to another server with a fake news story. So, again, we were in a bubble where we didn't know what was true and what wasn't true. So it wasn't until I got to the airport, I think, on the 10th that I'm like, oh, wow, this may be legit.
It is kind of a weird announcement.
And it's so you wouldn't believe it. It sounds so hoaxy, you know, the Onion anyway. It, you know, you just wouldn't believe it was real.
Yeah.
You know, the best analysis I saw, because basically Google's still Google for people out there listening. What happened is
they got acquired
Larry Page
by themselves.
Larry Page and Sergey Brin basically like made a company that's a parent company to Google, and then they're going to run that, and then it has all kinds of other companies under it. The best analysis I saw, the idea that sounds like it maybe makes the most sense, was at Gizmodo, and Annalee Newitz posted an opinion piece that says, "Is this Alphabet thing all about Google's Tesla envy?" Because if you notice from the announcement, all the like cool, you know, the big projects with the, you know, the big experimental moonshot kind of project are the things that are all focused, and the stuff that really makes the money and just runs every day and works is kind of behind is less. Where when it was Google as the parent company, then the Google piece, the money part, the normal everyday operation stuff was what everybody talked about. And, you know, yeah, if they bought some little things that, you know, that did, you know, or if they had little side projects, people weren't, you know, people talked about it under the terms of Google, but it didn't get the kind of attention that you know, Elon Musk gets with his pieces.
That probably
his different projects.
That probably plays a part into, I think, too, just from hearing like some of the people that I know from over at Google, a lot of them were worried that they're slimming down. So that some people like actually signed on to go work for Google. And there might be a couple of them that are finding out like you're no longer with, you know, quote unquote Google. You're now with this other company that's held by Alphabet. But I think that Google had just gotten into so many different, you know, avenues with, you know, with Glass and with YouTube and with all these different things that it's going to kind of like let Google slim down, you know, kind of decrease the payroll a little bit and let Google be more Google. And, you know, let the other company that they started to stop human death, you know, to prolong life forever, let that be a spinoff, let all these other things be a spinoff and not hang or affect Google, you know, on a quarterly basis. So I think this is much more of a business decision. And it's probably a little bit of envy, but more just to where Google can be Google. It can be the cash cow, and then they can do all these other cool things ancillary from that without it ever, you know, leading back and poisoning them.
It helps with branding, too. It allows them to separate out military and defense stuff that they want to get involved in, anything weapons-related out away from the Google brand while still maintaining corporate cohesion and letting them make money from it.
Yeah, a good way to make it kind of clear is what's still Google? You know, search, advertising, maps, YouTube, and Android are all still Google.
All your personal data.
Right, yes.
And then on Alphabet, there's like Calico, which is an anti-aging biotech company. Nest, which everybody knows. That's the only one that has an actual product right now.
That product is Matthew McConaughey.
Although the other one they have is a product that lots of people would like to have, and we didn't get to it last week, or a couple weeks ago, but it has been announced for San Antonio, which is Google Fiber is no longer going to be Google Fiber. I guess it's Alphabet Fiber, the high-speed internet service. That's not going to be part of Google anymore.
Has Alphabet ever said they're not going to be evil? Is this like an end run around that whole don't be evil thing? Because Google did, but I don't know about Alphabet.
I don't know. Alphabet sounds fairly harmless, kind of Mr. Rogers-y. If they were really wanting to go all out, that they could have been like
a little bit.
It's very Sesame Street.
They could have been like Jehovah or Yahweh or something instead.
Well, the Alpha, the ABC, the very first, and then the last. That kind of has a bit of a biblical thing, kind of thing.
X, Y, Z.
Full alphabet.
Google knows all about me.
So they've done. I guess their branding so far has been kind of like the alphabet blocks, like that. And they've got G is for Google, which was kind of how they reassured people, like, "Hey, Google's still Google." So I wonder if they're going to have to fill out the whole alphabet, or if they're going to say, "Nope, we've already got one E startup. We can't have any more E's. We do need a Q, though."
They're going to basically own the copyright to anything that starts with a letter.
Any letter, you must go through them, except I. I wonder if they're going to be like the I will
can't
be the one missing letter.
It's not really the whole alphabet. Apple suing Google for the improper use of the letter I.
Darn it.
They already got Y with YouTube, although that's still part of Google, so I guess it's technically not alphabet.
So, Pete, is this like the next big – do you think this is envy, or do you think this is the next big restructuring to get ready for, like, you know, all the next buzzy things, like the Internet of Things and everything that's about to become alive and, you know, with circuits?
Well, I don't know if I'd go with – I don't know if I would go with envy or jealousy. I think it has to do with being geeks. And I think that what happened is Larry Page and Sergey Brin, the day-to-day corporate operation stuff can't be nearly as interesting
boring
as all the kind of cool fun stuff. So you basically peel off all the, like, really out there fun things and leave the work stuff in one place and put it under somebody you trust and can run it well and all that stuff. And then they can go out and kind of have some fun.
Which, once you make that kind of money and you kind of offer that, you know, that kind of contribution to the tech industry, you should just be able to go have fun and play with the toys you want to do.
It's just when you formed Google as your big thing, instead of like Woz when he left Apple, you know, he like went off to work on, he worked on teaching and he worked on like a universal remote before that was a thing. But when you're Google and you step away, you have so much cash and stuff going on that it kind of makes sense that you'd have to form like an entire another company to own multiple other companies to do all the stuff that you might be interested in doing. Hmm. So I don't know. There's you can look at it sort of two ways.
Hello.
And you know, I think they're more like Woz than they are like your day-to-day business, like Warren Buffett or something.
Well,
that's the news.
They did do their stock swap. Speaking of Warren Buffett, so if you had Google stock, you now have. I think they did it already. I think if you had Google stock, you now have Alphabet stock. They did a switch right out. They switched everything out. So Goog as a ticker symbol, I don't think exists anymore. I think they just swapped.
I thought
it
they
out.
Said they were going to keep the two
yeah.
ticker, sim-
keep the
symbols,
ticker symbol?
But they were swapping entity, stock
yeah.
stock out.
Magic. I don't understand how that works anyway.
So one of the other things that we encountered at DEF CON was the FTC.
Yes, this was cool. And this is actually an issue a lot of people that listen to the show may be having.
Well, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, was out at DEF CON and sponsoring a challenge for, you know, technically minded hackers and technically minded people and hackers and whatever of all stripes to develop technologies to find a way to combat robocalls. And they were talking about, the theme was the humans fight back.
Humanity strikes back,
yeah. Nice. And so the idea was that they've got this three-phase thing going on, and they're in the second phase of it where they're trying to identify and be able to intercept all calls, detect robocalls and prevent them from getting to the recipient, because these robocalls are calling up and saying, where were the IRS? So, you know, there's all kinds of scams going on the phone. done with robotic dialing. And the one organization that I looked at that was doing something kind of interesting, where there's an app you can put on your phone, and it basically what it does is it takes all of your incoming calls and forwards it to a server that listens to it for about 10 seconds to determine if it's a robocall or not. And if it's not a robocall, it sends it back to you.
What do you hear as the caller?
As the caller, all you hear is ringing. It simulates the ring. And so it listens to see if anybody's, like, if there's what the ambient noise is. And
hello, ladies and gentlemen, you have won $10 million in a cruise.
And if it's a robocall, it sends it, forwards it to this server that then...
They were calling it a honeypot.
For robocalls, so that they could identify the numbers being used. And
actually start looking and seeing where they're coming from and actually prosecuting, maybe going after some of these services.
They're talking about... I talked to a woman who is a lawyer for the FTC, and she talked about, you know, the different companies that they've managed to prosecute. So a lot of the companies, yes, they are calling from... they're outsourcing to call centers outside the country, but the people that are running those call centers are still in the United States. And she said they go from, you know, very large phone banks doing this to all the way down to just, you know, some guy running out of his basement, you know, outsourcing to a call center somewhere. But it was very interesting in the idea of being able to intercept those calls. So the FTC, you know, you think, you know, I remember way, way back in the day, in the early days of the Internet, when it seemed possible to combat spam. It seemed like if you could just dedicate, you know, a half hour every day to contacting the ISP or...
I'll email them and ask them not to spam me anymore.
I remember those days.
Yeah, you could actually maybe get somebody's account disconnected if they were going to be habitual about it. To now where we use filters and systems that are designed just to go look at your Google spam folder once in a while. It's kind of distressing because we've just kind of tolerated it. We're willing to sacrifice every now and then a legitimate email just to prevent the deluge of spam coming down on us. So when people have contacted me about these phone scammers, you know, that call up and say we're with Windows or we're
well, that's even a slightly different thing. So not quite robocallers, but yeah, when G was hanging out, he asked, like, well, hey, what's the legality of these things?
Well, I mentioned, you know, that's also in their sites. But what my point was that, you know, when people contact me about these different phone scams, whether it's robocalls or whether it's people kind of conducting other kinds of fraud. Uh-huh. And people will, you know, especially like through email, people say, well, what can I do? And I always kind of thought, like, well, you can report it to the FTC, but they're going to be so overwhelmed. I can't imagine that they're acting on very much of it. So when I saw this going on at DEF CON, it rekindled a little bit of my fight the fraud fire.
Our tax dollars are actually going to something kind of cool. They've got a task force. They're doing something about this. People were intelligent.
Now it might be
two people against an army of robocallers, but
they're leveraging the talent that shows up at something like DEF CON to say, you know, create this technology that will fight this fraud. And you could see, like, this one, the one group that was doing the app to do it, to capture these calls, it's they were only at it for a couple of months, and they had this map, screen on the roof of their booth that was showing every call that got intercepted. You could go down and listen to the calls if you wanted to, and they were capturing them
like geolocating them.
Yeah, they're geolocating the call and saying, okay, here's the call. It's coming in. It's a robocall. Forward. It's a real call. We go to the phone call, but they had only been at it for a couple of months and had this much going, and it's kind of crude and not necessarily something I want to do with my phone right now, where I have all my calls forwarded. But I talked to them about, they don't capture any of the data. They don't record it. They don't want, you know, all these phone calls recorded. I mean, but there's still a level of trust that says, okay, all of my incoming phone calls are going to go to this service. They do have a whitelist. You can whitelist the calls and blacklist calls, but It was very interesting. It just rekindled my hope that the government is actually doing something that might be worthwhile to combat some of this fraud that's going on. You just turn on the light and the roaches are there. It's just horrible. just rampant scamming and fraud is going on either on the phone or online. So I was I had hope renewed.
It's nice to see some pushback. One of the other things that I went to a talk, we mentioned the Wi-Fi pineapple before, and we've talked about this the last year, too. There's been a big vulnerability out in wireless to where if you have like a phone or a laptop or a tablet, anything with wireless, the manner in which it went to connect to your favorite base station, your favorite access point, was a little bit flawed, where it'd be pretty easy for someone to get in there and get in the middle and do that. The good news is that the tools that have been out for 3 or 4 years to let people easily do this, the wireless manufacturers are finally starting to take notice, and a lot of those attacks are no longer working. So all these devices that you used to have that you could, you know, hop into an airport, hop into a coffee station, you know, click a couple things,
coffee station.
I'm still so tired from Vegas.
Coffee station.
Coffee station sighted.
Those don't really work anymore, which is really cool. And then even something cooler is there was a device that was put out that lets you automate these kinds of attacks, and someone actually wrote a virus to infect these devices and then let, you know, his stuff jump on all these uninfected devices. They weren't initialized yet, so brand new out of the box packages. More or less, here's the deal. You buy this little thing that's designed to beat up wireless networks, and if you plug it in and you don't configure it immediately, which takes about 45 seconds if you're an extremely fast typer, if the script that this guy's written configures it before you in the seven or eight seconds that it takes, he gets in there, he installs some back doors, he installs a way to let himself in, some things back to him, and he just leaves it as it just normally is, which is kind of neat. So you would never know that it's on there, but yet he owns your box now. And then every 1 minute, that actually scans for other of the same device in the area, and then it hops onto those devices, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and you can
like
see
some kind of virus
pretty
something.
Much. So this being this was there was a talk that was kind of designed to be given as a workshop, but not everyone brought these little devices in. But at the very end, I was kind of helping out with a couple things, and some other people were too. You can look at these serial addresses, like the base station IDs of the other devices that these have jumped to, so you can see how it's spreading. And the idea was they weren't going to release it at the con because they met the guys that developed the Wi-Fi pineapples and said, "Oh, they're pretty nice." And these things may or may not, you know, be a little bit less relevant here in the very near future. So at the very end of the talk, we looked at the, you know, we looked to see if we had success, and there was one that got out. There was like one BSS ID that we didn't know and that wasn't in the room. So that may actually be in the wild, which is kind of neat. But that's there. A lot of people are attacking the attackers because a lot of people that go on the offense, they don't necessarily run all the defensive stuff, at least the people that aren't thinking about it. So it's neat to see some tools to fight the people that are, you know, maybe coming after some of your stuff.
Yeah.
And we will have that out this Friday, too.
Very cool. Now, that I'd like to see. The rest of the stuff is boring, but that I definitely want to see now. No. This is all great stuff. I'm sorry I missed the conference, because it sounds like you guys had a great time.
No, it's definitely a lot of fun. It was a little disjointed, I think, this year, being at the new hotels, trying to get the lay of the land and figure out how that all worked out was a little tough. And there was more congestion initially than there has been the last several years when they moved to the Rio from the previous hotels, which I had not gone to those, which I heard were very crowded and congested. And Rio seemed quite open and everything seemed very good. And now they got back to where there were some kind of cramped quarters. And
I think they didn't plan on the very first days. They've started introducing some 101 tracks that are kind of like introductory. It's your first year at DEF CON. Here's what you should do. Here's a strategy to, you know, maybe to be able to survive the next, you know, 4 or 5 days of your life kind of a thing. But they didn't count on how many people were going to show up for those 101 talks. So on Thursday, that's when everything blew up. So it turns out from talking to some of the people, that may have been preventable. They just weren't expecting that turnout. So hopefully we won't have those same issues next year. At least on the very beginning days, they'll make some more space. But it did seem overall that some of the areas were smaller. It was just spread out over more space. A lot more walking this year.
It's good for you. And it's in Vegas, so it was nice and cool, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice manageable temperatures.
But what was the weather like?
Rainy the first day we got in.
Really?
Yeah.
It rained also another day. There's 2 days of rain.
Yeah, a little odd. I don't think I've ever been rained on in Vegas
before. They said
it's
very rare that it rains there.
It's monsoon season.
It's monsoon season in the desert.
Someone hacked the weather system. Someone hacked the planet.
OMG.
Uh-oh.
Z-O-M-G.
Yeah. All right, so we are wrapping up the first hour of Technology Bites.
Oh, I wanted to say...
I wanted to get some afflicted stories before we get...
No, I was just going
to
say, so when Lost got up at closing ceremonies...
Lost is the person who... at DEF CON generates or creates all of the crypto challenges.
Yeah, he's got like Lost's Mystery Challenge, and he does the badge design now every other year, all the analog badges.
Oh, you got to talk about the badges too. Oh,
yeah. So when he got up to talk, he was wearing the T-shirt that I had thought about trying to get to wear at DEF CON.
Which
he was wearing it.
Been you.
You could have been twinsies.
It was the Shepard Fairey Obey ripoff from Mr. Robot with the logo with F Society underneath it.
Is that out there and floating around? Can you buy those or can you find those?
Yeah, some guy did it. It's not. I don't think it's officially through USA Networks or anything. But that's what he was wearing, and I was like, oh man, I'd been thinking about getting one of those, and I didn't.
There was a lot of respect for Mr. Robot out there.
There was a lot.
Yeah,
that was. I watched. I was going to watch on TV Drunk Hacker History because Drunk History is pretty hilarious. But, you know, they get to film it. I think they can control how drunk the people are, and they get to edit it. And this was just a bunch of, like, OCD drunk hackers acting stupid and not answering any questions or staying on target and over-talking each other. And at one point, one of them just, like, vomited on the stage. It was hilarious. It was hilarious.
That was
like a train and a car just slamming into each other. Two trains slamming. It was horrible. I couldn't stop watching it. And then they took it off the air.
Now, how fast was the first train traveling? How fast was the second?
I'm going to say like 70 miles east and like 65 miles west.
If a drunk, vomiting train traveling at 65 miles per hour leaves DEF CON. So Flicted had a unique experience this year at DEF CON. He's being recruited.
Maybe. I was on a trial basis.
Trial. So at DEF CON, the people that kind of, the volunteers behind the scenes that do security and also help set up the talks and stuff are referred to as goons. And there's a certain amount of, I guess, power and prestige.
Some pride and stuff. I mean, it takes a lot of people behind the scenes to make everything go. And Flicted hung out with some of the ranks and looked kind of goonish in a good way.
So Flicked did a trial run as a goon, a speaker goon.
He's
so.
Controlling the speakers right now. You see this?
Enough of that. All right. So we are going to take a short break here because that's what the music tells us. We'll be back after these messages for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicked.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's Screwdrivers.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk. Firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston. KPFT recientemente ha finalizado su campaña de membresías que tuvo al aire. Si usted fue uno de los muchos radioescuchas quienes se unieron a esta campaña, muchas gracias. Antes de que lo sepa, su sobre de membresía llegará por correo. No olvide mandar su donación. El gran sentimiento que usted obtiene cuando apoya KPFT es mejor una vez que usted haya colocado su cheque en el correo. Y si usted perdió la oportunidad de unirse y apoyar las noticias, la música u otra gran programación que usted escucha cada día, aún hay tiempo. Únase por vía internet visitando la página www.kpft.org y haga su parte. Gracias una vez más por apoyar a la radio de la comunidad. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Bum, 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 bum,
Houston.
Welcome back to the second hour. Welcome to the second hour of the Technology Bites. Welcome back to the show. All right, so I need to go look at show prep here and see what I've got.
Well-planned show.
Yeah, perfect show.
Perfect show. Perfect. Every week's a perfect
What's
show.
Preparation?
All right, so Oh, here we are. So, oh yeah, I gotta pick the right one. And I have to turn the volume up to make that actually work right.
No one can even hear you when you take your mic off.
We need to load this on the system. But here we go.
Bite of the apple.
So the combined Bite of the Apple themes, huh?
Double crunch.
I was scared, then happy.
Now I'm scared again.
Happy scared.
You're scared your Mac will reboot and of apples. Well, on the interesting Apple front, if you're somebody who has to have, like, the latest iPhone when it comes out.
I do.
It looks like you need to set calendars for somewhere around September 9th. The rumors are fairly strong that that is the next Apple event, and that the, here's the deal. Around the 9th, they'll have the event, and then usually they release the next version of iOS the Wednesday a week after the announcement. So that would be September the 16th. And if they follow the same pattern as before, the new phones would be September the 18th. So you can be ready for that if you're going to go, I don't know, wait in line or sit up till 3 a.m. and pre-order or that kind of stuff. But what are they going to release? Well, there is a rumor that says that there'll be a sort of small, medium, and large next gen iPhone. The new word around the campfire is that Apple released a smaller iPhone 6C as well as shipped the device in a variety of colors alongside the flagship models. The rumor comes from Evan Blass, who's at EvLeaks Twitter account has been the source of numerous accurate leaks in the past. So the thought is that we've talked about the different stuff the iPhone 6S might have. It sounds like the biggest thing is like the force touch screen, a better processor, and those kinds of things. So the other thing that's rumored to come out on the 9th is, of course, this is one of those that keeps being rumored every other time that they have an event, or every single time they have an event. Supposedly they were going to announce it at the WWDC in June, but Apple TV, the now more than 3-year-old set-top box, may be replaced at this next event. The New York Times reported that those plans to release it at WWDC had been postponed at the last minute because the product was not ready. Today, a report from BuzzFeed, the same place that originally reported on the WWDC plans, says a refined version of the same box will be coming out in September alongside the next generation iPhones. So the hardware sounds pretty much the same as the rumors from in the spring. Most importantly, the new Apple TV would be released alongside an SDK and App Store that would open the platform up. So right now, to get on Apple TV, content providers have to work with Apple and create channels that are pushed to every Apple TV if you haven't had one or seen one. An App Store would mean that there'd be a lot more stuff available to the device, and it could make the set-top box into a sort of mini game console in its own right. So one thing that is not rumored to be coming is a subscription TV service, something that's been rumored around for a long time. In May, the Wall Street Journal reported the service would include around 25 channels and be $30 or $40 a month, but sources have told both BuzzFeed and Recode that the service won't launch until later this year or possibly sometime next year. So if you're happy about, if you want an Apple TV, cool, then that's good. If you're wanting to use it to be a cord cutter and like cable, then not. That's fine. And if you're just.
Ouch. I think somebody's cut your Pete's cord.
Somebody's cut your cable, Pete. You.
I think the Russian hackers have found
it. I guess so.
We have a hacker in the system. It sounds like they're coming in the back door, Pete.
The squeaky yeah. back door.
Or they're using AOL Instant Messenger.
It's the perfect cover. No one else is using down. It.
Well,
but yeah, it should be interesting. You know, Apple, that it's, you know, there's always enough new features so far. They still have new features to put out so that it keeps it exciting as far as when an event's coming up as to what's it going to be like and how's it going to work. But you got to wonder how many more do they have before they, you know, what's left. The, you know, we'll inject an iPhone into your brain. It will use your own eyeballs for a display.
Yeah,
is kind of what we're coming to.
Well, I mean, remember, this comes up every time Apple does a financial announcement or they do their quarterlies. I mean, they're making so much money based on overseas sales at this point that you've got to wonder. I mean, you know, the plan is to make a 6C and a 6S and a 6S Plus, and then maybe next September we'll get a 7 and a 7S. And
7S Plus.
7S Plus the year after that. I mean, it almost feels like they're limited by their success because they've delivered for so many quarters now, so many, like, quarter after quarter after quarter of record-breaking, expectation-breaking results, a lot of which in the past couple of years has been based on overseas and developing markets, that maybe they can't break out of the formula. Maybe if they broke out of the formula, they'd take a risk and they may miss some guidance, and then it would be the apocalypse when Apple stock and values plummet.
So isn't that what the Apple Watch was?
You know, maybe. And you remember, Apple isn't releasing Apple Watch sales numbers. They're very explicitly saying they're not going to release sales numbers because they don't want to help
make
out.
Everyone else envious by showing how many Apple Watchers are selling.
Their actual
right?
their reasoning is they don't want to help their competitors out by releasing sales data, which doesn't make any sense to me. But I don't know. I'm not an Apple executive, so maybe they know something
what are you doing
I don't.
Here?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have a feeling it helps their stock price more than anything else than their competitors. Because the sad thing is, they could sell, you know, more iPhones than ever before, every other time. And if the Apple Watch wasn't quite up to expectations, their stock would drop by a huge percentage just because it'd be the only blemish on their record.
Yeah.
So maybe they have a better understanding of the stock world than Steve Jobs took the whole business thing to heart when he came back.
Gigantic, hugely successful company understands their business. I don't know. I'd rather just sit here and armchair quarterback it and be right.
I want to jump. Technology Bytes wants to jump ahead and have the first insulting way to refer to the new Apple phone that's coming out. Yeah, more like the Apple sucks less instead of the 6S. See,
wouldn't it be a little?
So you guys can use that even before they. You can use your best comic book guy voice and be ready to say that at the actual keynote.
But it would suck more, not less.
At this point, any kind of thing, anything other than perfection, me is like a slap at Apple.
Go back to the insult lab.
Worst 6C ever.
Oh, we can do sucks ass, but I guess that's
red button.
Is that buttonable? They don't have the list here anymore, and so I have no idea what words really. Can
I've been forgetting what all
say.
The bad words were.
We could play the George Carlin skit,
and then we'll guarantee that we play some of the ones that you absolutely can't.
All right.
Say.
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Yes, here's the latest contestant to go into the Snark Lab.
Jay's getting bumper happy.
It's been nearly a decade since the earliest whispers suggested iRobot makers of the Roomba were building a lawnmower. But now the FCC has granted approval to iRobot to build a hands-free mowing bot.
Did you ever see Maximum Overdrive?
I did.
This feels like that.
The mower, according to Reuters, would operate through stakes in the ground that wirelessly connect to a mower and map out where it should cut. Mm-hmm. Instead of right now, if you get an autonomous lawnmower, you have to bury a wire, and it detects for the wire to know where the edges are to stop. Where this would use stakes, so you wouldn't have to bury stuff, and you wouldn't have to have as many to do it. The big obstacle, the reason the FCC had to give them a waiver, is that the National Radio Astronomy Observatory argued that the mower's signal would interfere with telescopes. But the FCC sided with iRobot, saying its limitations would ensure that astronomers' work was not harmed.
Well, plus you got to have priorities. I mean,
what about the astronomers' pets and children or anything that might happen to walk in between that staked out area? So, I mean, really, unless you have all the pets and all the neighborhood children swallow that kind of stuff. I mean,
does the robot have pet and child avoidance, or is it just going to like mow over and murder everything that gets in its way?
Whatever defines the edge of the lawn that causes the robot to operate in that parameters and avoid the edges. You just strap that to the kid and the dog, too.
Tell you what, I wouldn't mow your lawn within 100 feet of a hacker.
Watch this. I'm going to turn them. I'm going to switch the polarity on the detractors to a bank of attractors.
No, they've had. I've seen like 10 and 12
mow
years
this.
Ago. The buried wire mowers, and I've even seen some that are on kind of a. They do a circular pattern, so you've got you can only like mow in crop circle kind
like
of patterns.
Tennis ball.
That go out where if anything trips that wire, it turns off. And I assume it's going to have some kind of sensors on there. But I was hoping for much more of a Roombia, like it mows until it bounces up against something and it turns directions and it keeps going.
I wonder, like the whole
neighborhood.
The true test will be when you drive down the street and you see a cat in a shark suit mowing a lawn.
I've heard the original concept would go until the blade.
Until its lust jammed for blood was satisfied.
That was the original.
Till the blade jammed on something, and then it would turn and go in a different direction. But...
What can go wrong?
Leaving a trail of bodies.
I'm assuming that with all the time and effort they've put in it, and all the Roomba money they have available, that probably you would run this at night. When you're asleep and the kids are not anywhere around.
We're assuming it's electric,
aren't.
Right? So you're not going to annoy the neighbors. It is electric, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's electric. And a lot of the ones that already exist are made to do it. And when they run low on their charge, they charge up during the day. And then at a preset time at night, they go out and cut the lawn.
Do their evil and then,
deeds. You know, see, it runs at night because it's powered by blood under the full moon.
Fear.
But when it runs low on juice, it goes back to its little
it needs
little
blood
house
to recharge.
Shelter and
they,
plugs,
they forgot
and
to put
in,
Asimov's three laws.
They put in Asimov's three lawns. I'm on fire.
My thought is that my variant on the law would be that if I had one of these Roomba mowers, it would allow me to have inactivity, and that would be a harm.
Yeah. I mean, who likes to mow the lawn?
Well, I guess I wonder if the astronomers were thinking this was just going to really take off, because that is a little bit of a valid concern. It sounds kind of silly, but, if you try and you look up at the night sky in Houston, you can't really see that much except for a couple planets, maybe the North Star. There's a lot of light pollution. You can't really see everything. And it's the same thing with, radio astronomy.
The Roomba's going to have super high...
Oh, no, they're worried light. About it's going to be ultra-wide band, the staking, the way that the stakes cooperate and say, like, hey, you're out of range.
So it's not visible frequency they're
It's not visible
about.
Frequency. No, it's ultra-wide band. So, just being able to listen. And you can even do some, with, like, radio-defined, you can do a little bit of that homebrew. People are doing it homebrew.
I'd just be excited for people that are, like, running around pulling up the stakes, like... run free, run free. all these lawnmowers just running wild.
There's so many Roomba hacks out there that just normal people are doing. But the thing is, if you know your average Joe gets a Roomba hack wrong, I mean, you know, maybe his room isn't as floor isn't as clean as it could be. This, unless they just, you know, I wonder if they're going to say like, do not tamper at all.
Trail of bodies.
Wow.
The tragedy yeah. could have been avoided.
There
if
will
only
be
somebody's going to, you know what? Somebody's going to attach it to a. Like a remote control drone so that it can be lifted up and do shrubberies and hedges as well.
No, I think this is going to be a really big, strong buy in Texas, provided can you attach fireworks to it? Fireworks and beer. That's some, and maybe a bug zapper.
And the special bottom handles so you can pick it up and trim the shrubs. Well, I'm sure it didn't help the National Radio Astronomy people when that story came out about where they detected that weird signal that came and went, and it turned out to be people opening the microwave before it was done.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I'm sure it was like, yeah, go microwave a burrito, Sheldon. We're going to mow the lawn. And our other thing for today, you know, again, the sad part is the summer, they just don't put out lots of new cool stuff. And this one, I don't know how soon it may be that it's a big waiting battle between the decades between when Google Fiber or this, which is Verizon. Verizon says it's tested 10 gigabit per second broadband service with a residential customer in Massachusetts using new technology that will let its Fios fiber to the premises network scale up to 80 gigabits per second. Quote, as the market demands.
So they'll be rolling it out to that one customer in that one state.
they apparently can go to unlimited speeds to the one customer. I believe he's an FCC director.
As long as he's happy, yeah.
It's Anthony Weiner.
Fios residential
speeds go up to 500 megabits per second downstream and upstream today. So that's not bad. Verizon's fiber network will eventually get a huge upgrade with NG-PON, PON2, next-generation passive optical network equipment. So they were testing it, recently in Verizon's central office in Framingham, Massachusetts, to a Fios customer's home 3 miles away, as well as to a nearby business location.
But no, I thought they'd stopped all rollouts.
Well, the really interesting thing about this is if you've ever read any kind of like empirical study about any kind of, you know, especially like customer surveys to, you know, how many people died of this disease, almost every single study comes out of the Framingham area. This is like, no, really, I mean, this is like a hotbed for measuring the pulse of America. And the fact that they set this up in Framingham, so someone can say a Framingham study showed that 100% of the customers in the service, yeah. That I think that's really ironic or intentional, one of the two.
I'd love to have Fios. Fios is available about 200 linear feet away from my house.
Can't you move?
Well,
can't you just get it there and just run fiber back over to you?
I suppose I could.
Pay the neighbor off.
That
say,
runs
look, you can
I
leech.
Mean, they don't want to tear up our street, but there's a neighborhood right next to us.
Microwave, fast point link. Short.
There's a lot of different ways I could do that, I suppose.
Microwave link right across the street. Just tell everybody to drive really fast through that area.
Duck. Put a sign that says duck. Slow children, duck.
Or, like, carry your meals through these two signs.
No astronomy, please.
You must be less than this tall to cross.
Not responsible for pre-cooked microwave meals after passing through this area.
Or just throw some Cat 6 across the street, you know?
Yeah. I'd rather just whine about it. Really.
Yeah.
It's just so much easier.
If I had Fios, like, even a half mile away from me, I would maybe find a way.
I wish, you know, I'd love to have the upload. I don't really care about the download bandwidth. I've had fast enough download bandwidth forever. It's the upstream that I want. I want more upload bandwidth that I can do more.
Well, not badly enough, apparently.
Not badly enough to.
Not 200 feet badly.
Yeah, it's so close.
It's so inconvenient.
The tough thing on the Google Fiber announcement for San Antonio is, first of all, San Antonio is a metro area that's not dissimilar in size to Houston. I mean, it's not quite as big as Houston, but it is large. And so when you say, it's kind of like when you say something is in Houston,
it doesn't
that
really mean
could
anything.
Be quite a ways away. It can involve a large distance. And so it's not clear where they're going to go in. And they haven't haven't planned it yet.
I bet it's the north part of the Anderson Loop.
That one house.
Right there? Do, you know, out where I am, that's where I am, there is fiber because AT&T is doing it with the AT&T's been using fiber with their U-verse there,
yeah,
and so hopefully that means that it's very easy to get fiber in.
Maybe they've got conduits that they're renting out. Of course, and if you have the choice between going with Google Fiber and going with AT&T, that's like a no-brainer. You want to go with Google because U-verse is like the. I don't know of an appropriately clean metaphor I can make. It's the worst one.
they only do well when you compare them to their competitors like Comcast.
They don't even do
but
well.
That's
then.
Kind of like that's kind of like saying you're the least disgusting serial killer in the group. Or...
the person that's going to injure me the least.
But I would love, you know, like you were saying, the thing that would be, the gigabit down is neat, but the gigabit up is pretty sweet for somebody who works from home.
Yes. Somebody who does anything.
Now, you may upload actually be YouTube expected videos. To do a gigabit worth of work per day. That's kind of tough.
Oh. You'd be expected to host the technology
find
website fast. Yourself.
I'm sure you can find some artificial way to saturate a gigabit
Host a local gigabit version long. Of everything that's on Steam and everything that's on Netflix.
Did he have a Steam meltdown on Twitter yesterday?
I got very upset at...
What?
Not at Steam, no. I got upset at Rockstar, the company that makes Grand Theft Auto V, because they recently, I think it was yesterday or the day before, there was a set of mod makers for Grand Theft Auto V, folks that make modifications for the game, that were making I don't have the news article in front of me, so I'm going to get some of the details wrong. They were making basically an alternate way to play the game offline, or to play the game in a private realm. So, kind of like how many years ago the BattleNet...
Running your own Quake servers, even.
Well, it was more like there was some folks who were playing World of Warcraft who made a separate private offline World of Warcraft. I think it was World of Warcraft client. Maybe it was Diablo. It was the BNetD guys. They actually made a separate version of BattleNet, and Blizzard sued them into oblivion. And with Grand Theft Auto V, folks were doing the same thing. They were making sort of a way you could play the game online, but not within the confines of Rockstar's servers. And Rockstar basically declared that was facilitating piracy and banned all of their accounts, so they can't play the game anymore, and their $60 purchase is now thrown out the window, even though it had absolutely nothing to do with piracy. Yeah, it made me really upset. I had just bought the game because I just got a new video card and I wanted to try it out. And that alone, that just really annoyed me, and it was enough to make me go and try out for the very first time getting a Steam refund. And the process worked great. I got my money refunded from Grand Theft Auto V, and I got steamed at him, so I'm no longer supporting a company that makes hideously terrible anti-consumer decisions in the name of piracy.
Now, it's cool to go shoot some people on the street, but hold on.
Yeah, it's fine if you're going to drive somebody over now. In this game that's about, you know, stealing cars and murdering folks. But
no, it's all about morals, I get it, in Rockstar.
Gotta take a stand.
But yeah, don't treat your customers like prostitutes on the sidewalk when you're in a car.
Well, I just didn't like... It just really rubbed me the wrong way that their response to this whole thing wasn't... to get into like a debate about the end user license agreement, and it wasn't to discuss the validity or invalidity of doing it. They just said, "Oh no, that facilitates piracy. Nope, shut your accounts down."
So, did you have to have accounts to play in the thing that they had created?
So the way that this particular game works is there is a separate. So you buy it through Steam, and there is a separate account required. They call it the Rockstar Social Club. There is a separate account required to play the game, even single player. So you have to start up Steam, log into Steam, log into their stupid social club thing, and then launch the game, even if you only intend to play single player. And then once you do that, then you can say, I want to play single player, or I want to play Grand Theft Auto Online. And what they were doing was making a third option of like private servers where you could play online, but not in the bigger Grand Theft Auto Online universe. But by shutting their accounts down and banning them, they made it so they can't do anything. They can't play it solo, offline, can't do anything.
The issue was it wasn't so much what they were doing wasn't so much piracy, but they were getting around the check. The login is really an anti-piracy check is what it is. It's to make sure that you've got a real serial number, to make sure you did pay for the game via digital download, or somehow they've got you on record. you know, versus being able to run a million of crack copies of the same serial number.
It's more geared towards that. Because Steam also duplicates. Steam also does that. The Social Club is more
about... The Social Club is the ones that are behind it. Steam isn't saying, like, hey, you can't run non... You know, you can't run some Steam games off of their place.
And they're also tracking user behavior and monetizing you, and they have... It's tied in with social, and they serve ads to you in-game, and it is a combination DRM copy protection and also monetization tool to serve in-game ads to you, basically.
Maybe Rockstar recently acquired a former CSO of Oracle.
Oh, that couldn't have happened to a nicer company.
No, really, you can't do that, end users.
Jeez, man.
Did Pete mention that, like, one out of every 10 exploits that, you know, Oracle gets comes from users
outside of the security office?
Just the idea of saying to customers at that level, because, I mean, if you're buying Oracle anything, services, database software, Oracle hardware, storage, distributed computing, if you're buying Oracle anything, you have large, complicated needs. And it would follow that you almost certainly have skilled IT people working for you because you're dealing at that level with lots of complicated stuff. And those people are probably not dummies. Those people are probably capable of doing some security research and some reverse engineering for your company's benefit. But I mean, Oracle going to be Oracle.
I kind of understand them saying, well, you know, they're running these generic tools. They're getting false positives. The customers are freaking out about these false positives and talking to us, and then we have to go spend time to look into them. I can understand being annoyed about that, but at the same time, you're the security office. Like, that's your job. Like, that's you got hired to deal with security issues, and those are security issues. You know, I mean, so that I understand it, but it's a bad way to respond. But then to go on and say all that other stuff about, you know, y'all just need to not work on that. Look, we've got processes in place. We know what we're doing. Y'all need to just leave it to us. We'll take care of it, and y'all just go run the stuff.
Hey, bad guys, like, don't really, hack us. That's the wrong thing to do.
It's in the EULA. You
don't
can't
do that.
Do that. Don't
says
do
right
that.
Here you can't
it's just,
hack us.
It's just absurd.
Well, I mean, the core problem here from my point of view is you're asking customers to trust Oracle, and as trustworthy corporate entities go,
a lot.
Larry Ellison is basically the real-life version of Lex Luthor, frankly.
The truth about the people that are... It's not necessarily the customers. It's not like some person downloads Oracle and says, oh, I just found a security flaw. I think the people that she's getting really annoyed with are like the quote-unquote security researchers. They might tend to be a little bit younger. They might tend to be not quite so corporate. And by customers, they probably purchased a legal copy of Oracle, but I know a lot of people that might not have too. You know, so it kind of comes down to that. But the thing is, it's free research. And even if not everyone is valid, it at least tells them things to check out. And I know they've got to be spending a lot of money on, you know, reverse engineering and, you know, just all their own quote-unquote security efforts inside.
Which in and of itself is a legal protected activity.
No, that's almost not. The Wessner Act, which came out a week or two ago, is making all that try to flip on its end to make it the pure hunt for any kind of a vulnerability, make that illegal too. So that's something that got touched on at DEF CON but didn't really get talked about all that much.
It's disgusting. Another
thing it is certainly ironic when a company claims, you know, that they don't have enough resources to handle things that come from their customers when the CEO owns one of the Hawaiian islands.
Yeah. That's what
I mean.
You can
go look that up. I mean, he basically owns like 95% of one of the islands that you would know the name of. You would recognize the name if you heard it.
Larry Ellison, he's the CEO of Oracle. Oracle is a gigantic multi-billion-dollar company, and Larry Ellison is a gigantic multi-billion-dollar fellow. There's no shortage there. And, I mean, while we're talking about Oracle and their response to this, the fact that the CSO... It was the CSO of Oracle who did this.
Correct.
Right. The fact that the CSO, when the outrage about all this hit, the fact that they just pulled the blog entry and like tried to sweep it under the rug.
No, it takes it off the internet. That's fine.
Made it so much worse.
But even like going so like, you know, I read it like I think at first time on Wayback Machine.
Because they pulled it. They were like, oh man, we better manage this.
So then I'm like, well, what in the world? Like, I mean, this was just poor thought out, like gloating about stupid things and like berating customers for caring about security of the things they buy and just telling them to trust the vendor. It was all just so absurd. And I was like, what, you know? So I went back to a previous blog post that was still up
And it was the same thing.
And it was the same kind of thing. Like, she was just, she was complaining about the fact, so this one, she was complaining about the fact that it had become so trendy recently to find a vulnerability, some stupid little hacker that just wants, security person, just wants to get a name for themselves and get some page views and get some advertisement money. So they find this dumb little vulnerability that, and then they create this whole branding identity around it and set up a web page with a cute little icon, and they just make a bunch of money off of it and get on the talking circuit because that's all they really care about. That's basically what her previous blog post was.
Except there's no money in it.
It's just like, where in the world is this person coming from? Like, how are they CSO that's in touch with anything in the community that they're supposed to be operating in?
Maybe if Oracle didn't produce such ludicrously overpriced, terrible enterprise software and have such a horrible customer service reputation, there wouldn't be such schadenfreude in watching them fall off.
Larry Ellis is on the phone. Actually, he's out in the back alley. He'd like to talk specifically to you.
It's fine. I'll fight Larry Ellis.
I do think even, and this is
he's
true.
He's got John McAfee
I'll
with
fight
him
in real life.
I would pit John McAfee against Ellison. I would
fight Larry Ellison. He would kill me. I would be so afraid of Larry Ellison in real life.
Oracle pounding begins.
When that blog post hit the news, I heard there was a slow clap at Comcast customer service.
I think by the time you get to that level, you know, if you're a C-level executive, you know, and not so much in finance and other things, but especially in IT, the number of commitments that you have outside of just pure technical, you know, straight down, there's no way you're going to be able to keep up with stuff. At that point, it's all about making meetings and, you
of
know,
course.
And probably but at that level too, it's not necessarily that you're promoted on technical ability. It's not like you're the founder that, you know, that built the company, you know, brought it all up. You're put in there to be able to interface with other
project
people.
Project manager.
Yeah, it's much more of a project manager kind of thing. So
I do get
them being out of
technical abilities, but not.
But you would think
amount.
That they would have very good technical advisors to keep them in the know, or at least make them, you know, keep them from tripping over themselves with just, you know, just internets made
of
tubes.
But you think
just really
they would be aware
fact
of the community somehow on some level?
No, when you're at that level, you're
but
isolated.
Advisors, though, advisors.
Stuff.
They need.
It's not. So here's my. I would say that it's not. That they'd need technical advisors. It's that so there's value on one hand from directly exposing C-suites to customers with these kinds of unfiltered blogs where it's clear the C-suite is typing the blog themselves because the editing on the blog entries is absolutely terrible.
She writes murder mysteries with her sister,
she needs a copy and a line editor way bad. But at the same time, there's a reason corporate communication departments exist, and there's a reason why corporate communications departments don't let CEOs and CIOs talk directly to customers. It's because
blogging's their nightmare. I mean, really.
When you go off message like this and something like this happens, this is like, I mean, I guarantee you right now there's some poor like corporate comms guy at Oracle staring down the barrel of a gun looking at how like the next week is going to go.
Okay, I was wrong. Not consultants, handlers, or not advisors, but handlers.
Yeah.
Handlers.
It's the internet. How hard could it be?
You need to watch what you say. And I mean, you know, we as normal human beings think, well, how hard can it be? Why don't they just say what they mean? We'd appreciate them being straightforward with us. Well, sometimes you need somebody to keep you on message when it's this kind of a high-level communication.
Now, she may not have to worry about things too much. This is the thing. There's been a thing called, it was the Wassenaar Agreement. I want to say it came out of The Hague. It's an international agreement. And it's been around for a while, and it's always addressed export controls on conventional arms.
Okay.
And with that, this is what got for a long time. It was made illegal to export strong cryptography or move it because, you know, bad guys might get
this
really
is
good cryptography.
ITAR stuff, so, isn't it?
A little bit. It's related. So the issue is, earlier on in the year, there was an amendment made to it. It was kind of sneaky, and I'm not sure if it can be undone. But they added a part, and they took conventional arms, and they said, hey, let's also throw in dual-use goods and technologies.
What is that?
So dual-use, if you kind of, let's just at the most basic level, it's, you know, like, for instance, like hacker tools. Let's just, you know, like software tools. Or like a DVD. Let's say a DVD burner. It could be used to make, you know, backups of Jay's, you know, extensive, you know, photos that he's taken and watermarked and are his and, you know, he sold. Or, you know, we could, you know, someone could go and copy movies, or someone could go and copy something else. So there's a good use for it. There's a bad use for it. Or a knife, really, yeah. So the issue,
pocket fisherman.
Yeah, a lot of these things. So the main thing they're going after, what this all boils down to, is that they are targeting 0 days. What's called, you know, what a 0 day is. It's an undisclosed. And at some point, everything starts out as undisclosed. things. Really, people. So any kind of undisclosed vulnerabilities in software that could let someone circumvent a software product. So the issue is, what this is going to do is it's going to make it illegal, really, for people to go, not so much look for them, but if you've got one, suddenly you're...
To have a zero
to
day?
To have it. You can't have a zero day.
So is this written by her as a murder mystery?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just no good. And this somehow made it through. And again, maybe the U.S. will say we won't do that or we will do that. But we generally tend to go with the flow on things. And this is something that – oh, and this is related to the badges at DEF CON, not to bring it all the way back to DEF CON. They were actual – instead of digital, they were actual pressed 45 records. So they were records you could put on. You could play it. And they had –
were they 45s?
Or they might have 33 and a third. Yeah, they were
45s. They were 7-inch vinyl.
He wanted to get 33 and a thirds, but not many people pressed 33 and a thirds. A lot of people are still pressing 45s is what he said at the talk, I believe, that I went to. Or I might have flipped that, but it's – I believe there were
45s.
Most people
are – well – I mean, in a 12-inch format, yeah, it's either way. I mean,
oh, you know what? It might. It's one of the two. I don't know.
Were they 12 inches? Were you?
No, they were 7-inch. No, they were 7-inch vinyls.
Yeah.
Although like I thought it. I still thought it looked like a Flava Flav convention.
They may have been, but they actually on one of them. They embedded the Wassenaar agreement right out, so everyone has a copy of it.
See, I never saw. It didn't say that I saw anywhere on it whether it was 33 and a third or 45. So I haven't tried playing it yet.
It doesn't say. It's not marked. And there was
because you can do it either way. Because if you do it as a 33 and a third, you can get more on a 7-inch vinyl. But the other thing is, old 45s, they always had the bigger hole in the center. Mm-hmm. And this had a 33 and a third long play hole in the center.
Although that's more markings and style of player than anything. I would think that because I can never find my little adapter.
I'm pretty sure you can do either 33rd or 45 on any size vinyl.
So we shall see. Does anyone have a record player that
can
bring to the Geek Gathering? Do you want to?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm probably not
I've got like
a
1200, but I'm not going to throw that on the back of a motorcycle and try and get it out there.
I don't have a nice one like that, but...
So the badges, the DEF CON badges this year were small records, double-sided records, and I think they released a little bit of it, but there were talks. There was a big scramble to find record players. Suddenly 20,000 people needed a record player all in the small confines of Vegas.
Run by profiteering gluttons, and you call us criminals. We explore, and you call us criminals.
Allegedly, that's the Hacker Manifesto was recorded on the DEF CON badge.
So. Sounds like Bane.
I was really hoping for the best of Throbbing Gristle.
I think somebody, one of the first... Hamburger Lady, yes, I remember that. That's actually that's a story of a real person, right?
The Hamburger Lady?
The Hamburger Lady, yeah.
I didn't know that.
She was so badly scarred or burned or deformed that she was described as looking like...
I thought it was someone who served hamburgers to joyful kids.
It was a very grim, grim piece of music.
I've actually got that CD.
I had that record. I remember that's Flipper, right? Was it Flipper?
King of the Sea.
Who was it that did Hamburger Lady?
Throbbing Gristle.
Throbbing Gristle. Yeah.
That's why I said it, because Pete said Throbbing Gristle. And they've got that. The picture on the album is them like out in a, looks kind of like on the edge of a sea, like on a cliff or something, like with some weeds and the band standing there, and they kind of have like 70s clothes on, and it just kind of looks like them standing out in a field, and then you like flip it around, and you realize there's like a dead body that they're standing in.
So one of the
took a turn.
One of the things that
that's Throbbing Gristle.
One of the early when they released the badges and it turned out there were 45s records, actual vinyl records, pressed records. Somebody I think got on Reddit or got on the DEF CON Reddit or got on the DEF CON forums and posted what they said was the MP3 of what was on there. And it was a Rickroll.
If they recorded it in that voice, in the Bane voice, that would have been pretty good too.
And the thinking too is that there's some information encoded in the voice as well, because it's a little bit too gravelly and it kind of comes in and out to where people were wanting to run spectrographs on it and see if there are points, then correlate those to data and see if there's anything hidden in there.
They're running through there and they'll see Richard D. James' face.
Yeah.
Is it steganography when it's audio, or is it something
else? Well, steganography, you're not supposed to find it, is the idea. And you can put that in audio, you can put it in a picture, you can put it in... Stenography is just the art of hiding information, small pieces of information, and larger bits of information.
could be audio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
stenography.
Steganography.
Stegosaurus-nography.
Not like the dinosaur version. You know, a lot of stenography started out as birds. Or no.
What?
I'm going to have to fact check.
Wait a minute.
Joking.
What?
Joking. Dinosaur bird joke. They had feathers.
No, wait.
Yeah.
A lot of stenographers have feathers.
Chickens are the modern stenographers.
That's what we're getting at. Yeah.
Stenography is what you do in an office. Steganography is what you do in a cool office.
Yeah, for a while my mom was a steganographer, but they like, whatever my speech, here's a picture of a cat.
And then inside the picture of the cat is a picture of another cat, but it's hidden.
My dictated letter, and you gave me this picture of a landscape. Well, speaking of seeing some serious science, tonight is shower night, and no, all you scared hackers, it doesn't mean we're going to be putting soap and water on you.
I was going to say, how did you know it was my shower night?
First Wednesday after DEF CON is always shower night.
Yeah.
It's a meteor shower night. It's the, what is it, Perseids, I guess? I haven't heard it pronounced lately. But it's one of the big, it's the tail, it's the dust and ice from the tail of Comet Swift-Tuttle. Swift-Tuttle passes through Earth's orbit every 133 years, and the closer it is to us, the thicker that trail becomes. The comet is not due to come closest to us again until 2126, but there's still a pretty thick cover for us to see this year. NASA estimates there'll be up to 100 meteors visible per hour. Just in case, you know, that going out, like going outside to look up at the sky takes too much effort. If you go to the article on our website and you scroll down to the end of it, the NASA Marshall Space Flight Center is live streaming the meteor shower, complete with an astronomer's commentary and Q&A session. The SLU Observatory will be broadcasting their view tonight as well, beginning at midnight. The Marshall one's already going. There's also a way to listen to it. There's a link. Space Weather Radio will do the sounds of the meteors echoing against our radar.
Assuming you don't have a neighbor using a Roomba lawnmower, in which case that's gone.
Or big spotlights. You know, they're not putting out their disco lights. And the best thing is if you can get out somewhere that's going to give you a good clear dark sky to see. So you may want to head more down towards like Galveston, or I guess maybe out 59.
Or drive 6 or 7 hours to central West Texas.
Head west.
There you go. Yeah, if you hurry right now, you can just miss it.
Say, drive out to BFE, Texas to watch meteors, or go home and watch Mr. Robot.
Oh, Mr. Robot.
And still get a shower.
A real shower. Mr. Robot, meteor shower, no sleep.
Ooh, now if people watched the episode of Mr. Robot where they cloned a card to get into, was it Evil Corp or was it the Stone? What's the Stone Mountain?
Stone Mountain.
It's not called Stone Mountain there. Yeah, it is called Stone Mountain.
Stone Mountain.
It's so interchangeable now.
It's Steel Mountain.
Steel Mountain, thank you, to get in there. They showed him using the card reader with the software that we will also have Friday. We'll have cards.
We'll be reenacting scenes from Mr. Robot.
Even Flicted's the one that made me aware of this. So one of the maintainers of one of the tool sets that was used inside of the television show, actually. What did they do, Flicted?
Yeah, it was so at one point, it's pretty short, but at one point they're showing, I forget which guy it is, but he's running Kali Linux, and he uses the SET, the social engineering tool, to send fake text messages to the second-tier manager at Steel Mountain. So they just kind of show it. They don't talk about it. That's just what they use. And the guy who actually maintains the SET thought that was really cool. So within a few days, he released an update to the social engineering tool, and its code name was Mr. Robot.
Nice.
Well, the final science story, real quick, is that is what do a lightning strike and a meteorite have in common, you know, beyond the fact that they're forms of death and destruction that fall from the sky? Not much. You know, one is energy and the other is a solid object. But apparently when they hit rocks, they have the same kind of impact. There's a study where researchers found that lightning can shock tiny particles of quartz in a rock, forcing them to line up into bands called shock lamellae or lamellae or some other way you can pronounce it, however you like.
That sounds, feature that previously sounds delicious.
Thought to only form in the high temperatures and pressures of a meteorite impact. In order for it to happen, for the crystals to rearrange themselves on an atomic level to create this phenomenon, the pressure has to be intense, about 20 million times greater than a punch from a boxer intense. Scientists made the discovery by studying rock fulgurites, which are thin layers of glass that form on a rock that's been struck by lightning. So the lightning melts the outer layers of the rock. But then when they looked in, they found, you know, this atomic rearrangement from lightning striking rocks. You kind of think with the lightning thing, when it hits the ground, that it's not really, you know, if it leaves a burn mark or something like that, that's it. But that it's getting more, it's doing more than even rocks are affected by lightning strikes. One other thing, these rock fulgurites, if you ever look at them and know what they look like, if you're someplace where you see a lot of them, it means that lightning strikes there often and that you should maybe think about not being there if there's a thunderstorm. So apparently some of these spots, some of these, you know, just places with rocks get hit a lot.
Unlike the vulgarites, which just kind of mutter inappropriate things at you. Oh, well, you want to get struck by lightning, huh? Yeah.
I can't believe you just said that.
So even though it's kind of glassy, they're rough and are relatively rare. So I thought that's kind of, I just thought that was kind of cool, because you think when lightning strikes a rock, it's like, oh yeah, it'll leave a burn mark on the outside. There's nothing much else it's doing, and then it turns out it's getting down at the atomic level.
Atomic.
And that's all the news, and that's the show for tonight. Good night, everybody. Oh wait, we still have 15 minutes, right?
Dance, Peter.
Dance, monkey boy.
So did you guys try to solve any of the crypto stuff, or do they reveal kind of what
the biggest?
Because half the thing to me would be, what the heck, you know, is finding what's a puzzle and what's just something that's there.
No, the closest we came to solving any puzzles was figuring out which was the bar that was closest to the reception area.
That was the toughie.
We were trying to organize people to meet up for various things. They meet us at the bar by check-in.
Because we'd had a few years at the Rio, and there was a well-defined central bar.
The bars had a name
that we could say, this is, we're going here.
We're going to
here.
The I bar.
And yeah, the I bar. Bally's didn't have that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to QR code the bars or do some kind of, you know, lit LED paths or, you know, or talk beforehand.
Hey, you can steal the steaks
Geocache.
From a Roomba lawnmower.
So, no, we didn't do, I was listening. You know, there are people at DEF CON that are rabidly fanatical about solving the puzzles and go off. I feel like trying to get into the crypto challenge at DEF CON is a lot like joining up in a online multiplayer game and not knowing how to play.
Well, that's all you do too. I mean, the team that won this year, and usually how teams get it done is they'll show up several days before. They actually stalked Lost, the guy that was doing it. He posted a picture of something giving out clues. They, by looking at the picture, analyzing where they were, found him within 2 or 3 minutes in the hotel and were immediately harassing him to see what was what. So these teams, they come in, they'll be 7, 8, 9 people deep, and that's all they do for five days is work these problems. And they're cryptographers, they're puzzle people, they're all kinds. It takes all sorts of skills to do this.
One team left somebody in his room the entire time, just sitting back there, and every time somebody came in to talk to him or to do anything, that they would like listen to everything that was being said, and then they would get on the phone and like tell other people.
Pure surveillance. It was awesome.
Yeah, like they were just stalking him.
Poor guy.
No, that's really, you know, he lives and dies and lives and breathes that stuff. He loves it. So the challenges can be from what I can tell, they're very, very involved. And we got involved a couple of years ago and got, you know, you can have various levels of success, but ultimately you get crushed by people who do nothing else.
Just to give you an example of, like, something that didn't take, you know, like number theory or elliptical curve, you know, cryptography, anything like that. One of the things was there are a lot of different lanyards out there. So if you wove the lanyards in a certain pattern and then looked at that piece of cloth that it gave you and then took those symbols and then mapped them to keyboard coordinates, you could get it to type out something that may or may not help you in some other part of the puzzle. So it's just all very complex, very layered.
Yeah.
And that's something that's easy to get your mind around, but who would think, like, oh, these, if we weave them this way, and then, oh, those must be coordinates that map out to, and is it Ipsy-Dick or is it QWERTY? You know, who knows? You know, there's Dvorak. A lot of questions.
He designed all the badges. He designs the black badges. And so the black badges this year, he actually had several...
The black badge is something you get if you win the challenge, if you solve the puzzle.
You win certain AKA challenges that are considered black badge
worthy
contests.
And that gets you into every DEF CON.
Which means you can get in
DEF
CON forever for free.
In the past, they've been cool. This year.
This year is weird because it's like a piece of, I don't know if it was glass, I don't think it was glass, it was plastic, it was a triangle.
Hopefully leaded glass.
And in the corners, he had four different types of radioactive materials. I forgot, one of them was tritium or something, and he actually, you can't actually sell it in the United States, and so he bought it from somebody in Singapore or something that puts it inside coffee.
Packs of coffee.
Packs
much
of
like
coffee and
some
then
Colombians.
Shipped it to the U.S.
Sounds totally legit.
Yeah, now, the nice thing, again, is the title of this year's black badge "Good luck getting on the plane"? Or
no, he came through customs.
Good luck having children.
He said he wanted to see what happened with that, and so he had like four or six black badges with him, and he went on a plane ride a few days early to Vegas, and he said they stopped him at TSA, and he's like, "Oh man, here it is." You know, that they saw that I have like radioactive material inside of my bag. And they opened up his bag and they pulled out. So another thing he was doing is you had to do something with $2
scavenger
bills.
Scavenger hunt. There was a scavenger hunt that required a lot of the teams to find $2 bills. So what he thought he'd do is deplete a lot of $2 bills, which doesn't make entirely sense because I think he would have taken them out of Vegas.
Yeah.
But the story was he was taking them out of circulation.
He had a bunch of $2 bills, and that's what they saw. And so they went right past the badges that had multiple types of radioactive materials in them. And
sir, why do you have all this
pulled
cash?
Out the $2 bills and was like, "Why do you have all this money?"
Well, you know, the TSA has to protect us against all threats, real or imagined.
What did he say?
And to
he's
be
like,
fair, he didn't
going
have
to
going to Vegas.
I'm going to
Vegas.
Going to Vegas. Okay.
And he was.
Not a lie.
Gonna make it rain.
So just misdirection.
And he was also carrying 4 ounces of shampoo, so don't think they were important things. You know, instead of three, you know, the limit.
That dangerous, dangerous man.
Who knows what you could do with that much shampoo?
There was one moment, you know, since I go and every year I get the press badge, so I have my press badge, which is obviously a press badge. Once you figure out, you know, people quickly recognize that's a press badge, and either they're on the show floor and they're trying to promote something, or they're people that want to hassle the reporters and stuff. And of course, I'm carrying a camera. And there was this great photo I wanted to take, and I'm one of the polite ones. You're supposed to ask before you take a photo. So there was this girl in the middle of the show floor, not the vendor floor, but the challenge floor, and she you know, she wasn't particularly exceptional looking or anything, but she was nice looking and dressed a little hackery, and she had this giant antenna device with headphones on. And she's scanning.
Like listening to your heartbeat.
Listening to your thoughts. You said, no, you can't take my picture.
No, she's like scanning, obviously, cell phones, wireless devices and stuff, and they're recording whatever they're getting. And she's just basically invading everyone's privacy electronically.
Ooh, Barrett's phone.
And I said, can I take your picture? She goes, no.
Well, then don't scan my phone.
Don't scan my phone then. That's what it turned out for. And then I went up to take a picture. There was some kind of piece of heart.
Why
phone.
Don't you just tell her, no, I was taking a picture of the wall behind you. You just happened to be in the way.
I'm not going to be that guy.
Come on, be that guy.
So there was another time in the hacker village, in the hardware hacking village, somebody was doing a talk, and there was this there's this piece of hardware on a pedestal that had like a phone receiver on it and had some buttons and things on it. It was very interesting. I don't know exactly what
was that. The bomb defusal thing where they had to defuse the bomb within before the timer.
I don't know what it was. Down. It was just sitting there, and it happened to be on this pedestal on the floor next to a group of people that were sitting down watching this talk. So I went up to go to that thing because I wanted a picture of that thing. And so I point my camera at the thing, and this grizzly hacker says, you know, ask first. And I said, what? Ask the machine? Hey, machine, can I take your picture?
Blink to me, no.
Actually, one of the so on Friday morning, like the first talk in track one, somebody came up to one of the goons that I was with and said, hey, man, there's a guy taking pictures. You need to go tell him to stop. And so the guy I was with had to walk up to this guy. And he was in the very front row corner seat. And he walked to me. He's like, hey, are you taking pictures? And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, hey, you can't take pictures of the crowd, without asking people. Because I guess he was, turning around and taking a picture of, all the people. Because it was a full room. And
right.
he was taking pictures of, the entire room. And then that guy was sitting two seats from him.
You're not supposed to do that?
No, pictures. Sinan anonymity goes a long way there.
They encourage you not to take pictures of the faces. People don't want to have their picture taken necessarily.
However, people are always taking videos and pictures of the lines, the really long lines. They're always
cell phones are broken down, but I think that's not people. I think those are newcomers to the scene. And the other thing that I've noticed has fallen off a lot, that they used to, if you saw someone lining up to take a picture, you would give them the Johnny Cash. And I don't see that happening.
The friendly
a lot
wave?
Yeah, just you and the bird is what they get to take a picture of.
Well, one of the goons, he says, oh, so you're press. Have you been yelled at yet by the goons? And I said, not yet. And he goes, we'll work on that for you. But, you know, you try to be respectful. You try to, you know, I've got some great pictures. I went into the capture the flag area where everything was, they bring their darkness with them. The hackers bring their own shadows. And so it's lit up by all these terminals, all these laptops, and there's a great glow and a great look. And so I was trying my best just to get behind people and get pictures of backs of heads and screens and stuff, and I managed to get some of that. But yeah, you want to take a picture of everybody. You want to take a picture of all these people and all this stuff that you see, and you go, well, if I raise my camera, I'm going to get yelled at. I don't want to get yelled at. So next year, I may bring a telephoto.
Do it from over there.
Snipe.
That one of the picture of that girl scanning the crowd, that was just very... It was very bizarre. It was very unreal. All right. So anyway, DEF CON was fun. We're going to have more DEF CON debrief at the Geek Gathering this Friday at Cones.
2808 Mile Limit Drew.
2808 Mile Limit Drew. Come on out.
2808 Mile Limit Drew.
2808 Mile Limit Drew.
Virus.
2808.
We hope that you'll join us. It'll be a lot of fun. And
where's
get back
it?
Onto
it. Where's it at?
Cones. We're black. Cones. Bring an attitude.
No pictures.
The Cones. No pictures, please.
No pictures.
2808.
You.
Cones.
Thank you.
2808.
You have been listening to Cones. The 2808. 2808. It's the four-letter area code group. 2808. 2808. You've been listening to Technology Bites on
Cones.
Sounds like some kind of bizarre hacker relaxation.
Got some bleed in from the other.
It's a numbers channel.
Go Google search the Dalek relaxation tape. Trust me, it's worth it. All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. We're going to get out of here. We'll see you next week. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
3, 2, Groove House.
2808.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk. Firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston. Don't think you can make a difference? Be part of a movement that can revolutionize the radio station you know and love. By joining KPFT's Sustainer program, you can support your station and help KPFT reduce its pledge drives. What's a Sustainer? Rather than giving a yearly gift, Sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving $20, $100, or $500 monthly helps change the way KPFT operates. From having to meet our operating expenses through days and days of on-air fundraising, to friends of the station boosting it off-air throughout the fiscal year. Contact our development director at 713-526-4000 to inquire about our Sustainer program. Did you know Sustainers can ultimately give a gift that is substantially larger than annual givers? That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, just call our development director at 713-526-4000.